that's the point where most players realize, okay, this has something more than just pressing a few buttons, no? That you have to think about what you're doing.
Why have there not been more video games about card cheating? I remember playing Freddy Farkas' Frontier Pharmacist as a kid and thinking that the bit of the game where you have to catch Wheaton Aces Hall cheating was the best bit. Why couldn't that be the whole game? Well, game designer and illustrator Nikolai Trashinsky has taken up the challenge with Card Shark, a new game in which players have to lie, cheat, and swindle their way through 17th century France with nothing but a deck of cards and their wits to survive. On this episode of Scammapalooza, I talk to Nikolai about his inspirations for this unique game and the challenges that he and the team of developers at Nereal Games faced bringing it to life. If you enjoy the episode, please subscribe and leave a review at Apple Podcasts. It only takes a second and it makes a huge difference helping spread the word. My name is Nicholas J. Johnson and this is Scammapalooza. Congratulations on the game. It is one of the most elegant games I think I've ever played. The art is beautiful and the gameplay is challenging and the story and the characters are genuinely interesting. When I first heard about this game, I was like, oh, okay, if it's going to be set in the Old West or like a casino type game, it's going to be very American. And so imagine my surprise when it's 17th century France and it's essentially, the first thing I saw in the trailer was, oh, this feels like Barry Lyndon. And then I saw Barry Lyndon was an inspiration. Is that where you started with Barry Lyndon?
Yeah, it started, I was learning card magic for a few years as a hobby, just to do card tricks for my friends. And I was like in the middle of the really exciting part of learning, no? Like maybe a couple of years in, where you're starting to get the feeling of control that you know what you're doing, tricks are working, you get good reactions, and the curiosity, no, is there for learning more. So I was in this nice moment of learning card magic, and then in the middle of that, I remembered Barry Lyndon because it's a movie I've seen many times and I discovered it when I was a teenager. I loved it. And it has this very memorable scene where they cheat at cards. So from the perspective of being in that moment of learning card magic and thinking at that moment, it came this, oh, wait, actually, that scene makes so much sense. And it's so good. And now that I had like this tiny little window through which I saw all the different methods and logics that you can use for card magic, I was like, actually, you could have an entire game that is just that one scene from Barry Lyndon over and over. I guess, so that was the connection. And the fact that I knew enough to understand that it's not just dexterity of manipulation, you know, to perform these things, because that's what most people think, that's what I thought before learning anything, that it's mostly dexterity. But understanding that there's a lot of many other ways made me more confident in that idea I had promised, because there's variety in how you can do this.
While playing the game, it reminded me why I'm not a card cheat, like why I don't scam people. Firstly, like I said, I feel bad when people get shot. But also for me, that tension of you have to be... So in the game, you have to be obviously controlling the cards, which is one thing. You also have to be watching how suspicious the other player is and trying to bring their suspicions down by being fast but not too fast and making the moves at the right time. But also just, it took me a while to actually figure out, oh, I can't go in and just master the move and just go all in and bet all my money. Yeah. I kept going, yeah, I'm just going to bet 120, 150, and I would suddenly get caught. And it took me several times to go, oh, wait, that's very suspicious. I can't go in and just drop all my money on one hand and win and leave. That's a terrible technique. I've got to do this slowly. And it was literally half an hour of going, what am I doing wrong here? And all of those, you know, like all, and all of that has to be done at once. Was that all intentional? Yeah. All of that kind of multitasking, trying to get all of that into the game?
Yeah. So the intention was because I was having that nice experience of learning card magic and performing it for friends, I was having fun. So I knew the process is fun. So the idea was to translate the nice parts of that process and make a game out of them. So when you're learning card tricks, you're learning specific techniques to accomplish certain things, no, like controlling a card or making a false shuffle or a false cut, whatever. But then you practice some sequence that makes that a card trick, no? And so you learn individual techniques to accomplish specific things, then you practice a sequence, then you perform under pressure. Because if you only have one chance. If you screw up, the trick is ruined. And that's the loop that we kept in the game. You learn techniques, you practice a sequence, and then you execute under pressure. And so the idea was to, transmit that tension of now it matters. You know, like you can practice as much as you want, like a magician would do, but now that it matters, it matters. And I'm very happy we accomplished that.
Yeah,
because it wasn't completely obvious. There are many reasons why a player would not care about losing. I'm happy that we managed, because I've seen videos of people playing and they're really stressed out. And it's the nice kind of stress.
Yeah.
Where you don't want to screw up. And even if some of the techniques are really simple, the fact that it's timed, the fact that you have to remember. The hardest part for people, I found out, is memory.
Mm.
Most people are really, really bad with memorizing things. Mm-hmm. And that's one part when I think I was a bit off, because, again, from practicing card tricks, I became used to memorizing stuff. So you train that muscle, and then it seems easy. And then you discover, for most people, it's really hard to just keep a couple of cards in their mind.
I think, though, I'm sure that is perhaps true about just in general, people aren't as good as memory things as general. But I do think that computer games, over the last 10, 20 years, don't rely on memory. You know, like everything is, you're reminded of everything. Everything is written down. You're very much led by the hand through the game. And the idea that you would have to have any sort of information outside of the game memorized is pretty foreign, aside from perhaps speedrun or something, you're trying to remember a specific course or remember where something is, but remembering what to do isn't really something that we look for in games.
No, the two surprises for me was that memory and counting, like understanding the order of the deal and things like that. It's simple counting, but people struggle so much.
Mm.
And I'm actually quite surprised that people find it that hard, considering we have so many games that have like 20 stats, 20 buttons for different actions, skill trees. You know, you have like layouts of information in the screen with sub-menus and subsystems and whatnot. And people play that and nobody says, well, this is too complicated. But counting what is the order of the deal, you know, like, is apparently really, really hard.
Yeah.
So
I replayed Spider-Man, which is a game that has lots of skill trees and you'd constantly having to learn combos and stuff that I'm really bad at. And That is a game where I ended up probably having to remember more things than I had to remember in Card Shark. And I definitely didn't feel the stress of, I can't remember how to do this specific move. I guess, maybe it is also just part of the narrative of the game that, well, if I mess this up, there are consequences within the game that are not sort of die, respawn kind of feeling. Like, I was genuinely... The part of the game where I felt the most stressed out was early on playing against, the first time you play it against Voltaire, and he knows you're cheating. He knows you're cheating. And the worst thing that's going to happen is he's going to take your money and insult you a little and send you on your way.
Yeah.
But I just didn't want to disappoint de Voltaire.
Nice. That was... So it's also the first time you do this pick up stack technique, which is really nice.
Yeah.
And that was... I think that that's the first one that makes you think.
Mm.
So yeah, I guess that's the point where most players realize, okay, this has something more than just pressing a few buttons, no? That you have to think about what you're doing. That was probably the biggest design challenge for us, is the amount of learning that the amount of stuff you need to teach the player, especially assuming people don't have any knowledge.
Mm.
That was the massive challenge, honestly. And I'm quite happy that's how it feels. No, it doesn't feel like there was a possibility that it will feel like an infinite tutorial, you know, like the entire game is a tutorial.
Yeah.
Which is somewhat true. It just doesn't feel like it. And I can see it doesn't feel like it because people are invested in this learning process. My hope was that because you're learning something that is actually interesting and useful outside of the game, that people will be more willing to go through that much learning in the game.
I played the game, and my 9-year-old was watching over my shoulder, who knows a few tricks but doesn't really like card tricks. And they watched the in jogging a card and then knowing what position that card is in. And my kid watched that, just watched it. And then a week later, we're at a friend's house and they'd ask, and I was doing some card tricks, and they said, oh, can I do one? And they did that trick. No practice at all, but they did it. They did the whole thing, the whole process from start to finish. Oh, so it is definitely a way to learn how to cheat at cards. Everything in there is accurate. Were there things where you had to kind of say, ugh, you know what? This isn't technically how a card cheat would do this, but for the purposes of the game, I'm just going to sort of fudge it a bit.
Yeah. I mean, I would say mostly methods that are impractical, but are fun. So there are some examples in the game that it's something that no serious cheat would ever do because it's just too convoluted, but it makes a fun idea. No, there is one where you're bending cards and that is supposed to influence the cut, which would work somewhat, but there's just so many other much easier ways to achieve the same thing than doing that. But I really wanted to have this in the game just to show that concept that that bending cards is a way of marking and to manipulating the deck, and that using that to control cards is a thing that exists.
Yeah.
The whole strategy is too convoluted. Or the strategy where you exchange the deck, you have duplicate decks and you have to then remove the duplicates. Again, it's a funny idea.
Yeah.
But it's a stupid thing to do. Like, no cheats would attempt to do that because, again, there are so many better methods. But it just doesn't make sense to think for a game. Doesn't make sense to think like that, no? Like, what's the best method? Because you would just cheat the same way everywhere.
Yeah. You know, the performances that I do as a magician tend to be gambling related, and they tend to be related to card cheating. But if I was to demonstrate what actually happens in a card game, it probably wouldn't be that entertaining.
The other thing I wanted to have, but I never found, is the game they play in Barrio Lyndon is Faro.
Mm.
And we never say which game you play in the game, because that just leaves us open to... you, for some reason, you need these kinds of cards, so which makes it wider the amount of, like, the variety of cheats we can have.
Yeah.
But I was a bit, for a moment, I did want to have at least some representation of Faro because it was the game at the time. But everything I found reading of methods to cheat at Faro was so boring. Like, nothing, everything was counting cards and things like that, which was just not fun thing to do for a player in a game.
I don't know much about Faro, but my understanding is it's quite a mathematical game. Like, it is a game of points and numbers and advantages, and so it's not Texas Hold'em.
Yeah, it's probability. So yeah, if you count the cards and you just wait, it's, I guess it's similar to the blackjack counting in some way. Apparently, it has much better odds for the players. That's why nobody plays it anymore.
Oh, okay, right, fair enough. Yeah, my the main thing I know about Faro is that it inspired the name of the Faro Shuffle. That's, you know, like, yeah, it's not a game that I know much about. But I mean, that's what is also great about your game is that, as you said, you don't. It's not just that the card game kind of takes a backseat to the cheating. The card game itself is almost non-existent. It's
exactly, yeah, yeah. When we were starting making the game, it took me a while to explain this to the team. Like the idea that if you are helping somebody cheat, you don't care what game they're playing. You just need to know what they need, and you don't need to even know the rules of the game. So, most people, like players, are very surprised that you never actually play cards at all in the game.
Yeah. 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 It's great. The closest would probably be like three card Monty at the beginning, you know, like that yeah, first thing. That's technically you get the whole experience. But aside from that, no, it's really just the fun bits, just the cheating. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's something people often forget about, you know, con games and card cheating, is that it isn't about they're playing a different game. They're not playing a game of winning and losing. They're playing a game of getting away with it. That's the game that you play here. I would love to be able to create art as beautiful as yours. And I've never had sort of natural abilities. And so one of the things I wanted to do was to get better at drawing. And I thought, mm-hmm, as a challenge for myself, I thought, well, instead of drawing something that should be easy and look at it and say, this is terrible, I thought to myself, okay, I'm going to start drawing, mm-hmm, but I'm going to try and draw something really hard. And then that way, mm-hmm, when it looks terrible, I can say to myself, well, of course, that's really hard to draw. And so I settled on hands because everyone, every artist I speak to says, oh yeah, hands are really hard. And so I have some, yes. I don't have them here, but I have some books just full of my attempts to draw human hands.
I see.
And you have drawn a lot of hands.
It's like, it's true. It's
and
true.
You
it's
have
true.
Animated them as well. Mm. And not just drawn them, but drawn them and animated them for the purposes of showing very specific actions and moves. Yes. Was there, I mean, I assume there must have been many challenges in doing that. How were you able to do that? What was the process in?
Oh, it's my hands. It's all my hands. Like I'm in the game.
Ah, beautiful.
But only my hands. Yeah. Well, but because I was I do the techniques myself, mm-hmm, and I see what my hands are doing and how they're positioned. And in some cases, I did need to take a few photos to get the perspective. Mm-hmm. Like, what does it look like from the other side? Because I cannot see. Like a lot of the stuff where, like the overhand shuffling, and whatnot, that I can just look at my hands.
Yeah.
But other things, the perspective is a bit weird. And so I need to look what is like the position of the fingers looks like.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, well, I'm not able to do most of the techniques in the game like at real speed.
Mm.
I understand enough to know how you're supposed to do these things. And I can do it kind of slowly. I use myself and to be honest, well, after a while, hands stop being difficult. I think there are challenge like for people studying art, there are challenge for the first years. There is this moment of like click where it's suddenly easy. I mean, depends on what you need. Like the game is not hyper realistic. Like the hands are fairly realistic because, and this is something that I wasn't entirely planning on. Like the first tests I did, they were more stylized. It was more like a comic book, flatter. The fingers were longer, more exaggerated and things like that. And as I was working on the game, I realized it was not sustainable because for some things to be descriptive enough, I needed to be close enough to a realistic set of hands. So that evolved. But yeah, I guess my feeling is at one point it stopped being difficult unless you're trying to do like really hyper-real perspective, whatnot. Most of the time you don't need that. There's a bit of simplification in the style, which makes it kind of easy. And to be honest, the biggest challenge in reality was technical one, which is how like the hands have to be broken down into separate pieces, like because in a video game everything is like in layers.
Yeah.
This is a 2D game, and so every little asset, like the card, and for the cards to be in between your thumb and your palm, it means the thumb has to be cut out from the hand and put on top of the cards, and then the cards are on top of the palm.
Yeah.
And everything has to be cut out in tiny little pieces and then assembled back to look like a unified drawing. But it's not. It's all floating bits of drawing. And that is actually the biggest challenge, to figure out what needs to be cut out, how and when, because it changes also as the position of the hand changes and the move changes, then suddenly this floating thumb disappears and the palm has the thumb back, and then it doesn't anymore, and then there's one finger that is detached so that the finger can be on top of the cards. And this, all this choreography of pieces of drawing that needs to happen, and the player doesn't get to see, because that's the magic, no? That's the visual magic. It's all tricks also.
I know, it's tricks on top of tricks. But if it was made in a 3D environment, you would have a skeleton, and you would have muscles, yeah, and you would have skins. You know, you would basically create a hand, and that hand could then be, even, you know, by motion capture, I imagine, could just do them. You know, so when you say it's your hands, you could be wearing gloves and doing the moves. But because it's two dimensional, and because I guess you want the characters to move and look and feel in a certain way, it must have been like every shot was just a little bit different, and every move had to be treated slightly differently. Because all of the images were hand drawn.
Yeah, yeah. The game is entirely hand drawn, and I did, I would say, 95% of what's on screen. I did get some help with the backgrounds, but mostly with creating the actual texture. Like, the designs are mine, and a friend of mine, very good illustrator, Anapeth, she did most of the textures. Mm-hmm. And another couple of friends, they helped to process and layer that, because that was super long process and I needed help. But the designs and drawings and all the characters and all the hands and everything that you do in techniques, I did that personally.
Yeah,
that's a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's for me. That's like when you say card shitting, sure, magic tricks, okay, great. Drawing hands, well, that's, but then just the insurmountable task. I can't even comprehend how you would begin to do that. The lighting of the game was really interesting. One of the things that I loved about Barry Lyndon was how it looked, and that movie was entirely natural light sources. Yeah. There were no electric lights, so everything is the sun and candles. And it feels as if you've gone, they're not real candles, it's not lit by candles, but it's made to feel like it is lit by candles. Was that a challenge in terms of capturing that mood, but while also trying to get across exactly what's happening in the game?
I would say more a pleasure than a challenge. It was like a nice thing to work on. When we, very early on, when we started discussing the project, I think both Arnaud, who was the designer, and Francois, the writer, they both mentioned like how important it is to capture that intimacy of the card table lit by candlelight. No, like, you wanted to feel this small, intimate space carefully lit. And the thing for me is that I come from editorial illustration. I did books for children and adults for a number of years. And when I moved into moving image, I made animation films and then games, the first thing that was very attractive to me is light. Because in a book, you print your picture, and the brightest thing you can have is the paper, because you're just adding a paint on top of the paper. So you cannot really have effects, light effects. You can have shadow effects, but not light effects. You cannot make things something look really shiny unless you use some kind of special ink that is reflective and little things like that. But when you move into making images for a screen, the screen is light. And so it's very easy to create lighting effects. So when I first started making things like that, I was like, oh, this is amazing. And now I'm super happy. I want to play with all this idea of illuminating parts of the screen and making things shiny, because of what I couldn't do. And it's actually really easy because the screen is doing that. So it's kind of designed to do that. So in all the lighting effects in CardShark are actually super simple. Like technically, there's no high tech at all. It's all basic stuff. But I did know that because it's a game about sitting at a table and playing cards, most games are about walking and exploring a world. And this is about sitting at a table. So you're not going to walk around. So you won't have a chance to explore the world. And for economy reasons, because I was doing everything myself, it made sense that you just have static camera shots. The camera never moves. So I just have to make one background, one location. You sit at a table, you play cards, then another location. But because the camera is static, I didn't want this to look like a static illustration. I wanted to make it feel alive. So it was important for me that every single pixel is changing all the time. And so that's where lighting comes on. You just slowly fade in and out, slight changes of color and shadow and these bright spots of the candlelight. I guess one thing that helps is that everything is hand-drawn, including the effects of light.
Yeah.
Like the actual splashes of color of the candlelight are made in watercolor drops. And those are layered on top.
Okay? Yeah.
So the fact that everything is organic, because it's not just looks organic, but it is made organically, makes everything look more like an actual, like a physical thing.
Yeah. There's even some little, I think they're lens flares, I guess you would call them. The little...
Well, yeah, the idea was that it's like the dust in the floating dust of the room.
Yeah.
In the light. Yeah. Which is like the cheapest trick ever because it costs nothing. It's just this tiny circle particle that you make move around the screen and fade in and out.
Yeah.
That was kind of the point, is you add all these little tiny cheap things and individually they don't do much, but once you layered all of them on top, the entire image looks alive. And the place looks like it has an ambience to it.
Yeah.
There's actually an excess of dust, you know, there's all this effect of little particles, but that's the point, is you want to kind of feel the air.
Yeah, you said that you don't get a chance to explore the world in this game. And I understand you mean physically, you know, it's not, you know, like it's not like Breath of the Wild where you're sort of, you know, literally wandering around. But I do think one of the things that you have done with the game is, and this is in the art and in the story and in the dialogue, is to create a world in which as you play, you learn, you meet characters, there's politics, there's history. And at least half of the characters are real people. When did the story come in? Once you had the look and you had the Barry Lyndon inspiration and the card cheating mechanics, when was the story brought in?
So I guess just after we made the first prototype, like the introduction I proposed, like the structure, how the game starts, that idea that you play this game and your patron dies accidentally and then you're on the run. That I proposed, and that again is loosely based on Barry Lyndon. I think Barry Lyndon has one of the best setups for an adventure ever, you know, like a young man who has a reason, big reason to leave his home, cannot go back, and now he has, the world is open to him, you know, and that's the adventure. And so I wanted to have something very similar to that. So we built basically the first three scenes or so, like the tavern, then the camp where you learn these things, and then the manor, I think. And then Francois started writing the story. The story was written by Francois. We discussed a lot. I had some ideas for things I wanted to have in the game. Like I was caring more about the themes and archetypes of characters that you would meet, because I wanted to have every kind of cheater in the world represented. I wanted to have from corrupt politicians to actual thieves, you know, everything in between. So we made kind of a list of archetypes and people who care about honor, people who are very dishonorable, people who are somewhere in between. So we also have like psychics, we have con artists, imposters, like everything, you know? And so this story, came somewhere in the middle of as we were like figuring out all the different cheating techniques. In parallel, Francois was writing, and he came to this idea of this conspiracy. And for a very long time, the rest of the team had no idea. Does this work? Yeah. Because he had this massive diagram of the plot interconnecting, and he explained it to us several times. We just had some meetings, and he explained all the different acts. And when it's just explained like that, you have no idea if it works.
Yeah,
it's very hard to understand. Like, will everybody be surprised by these twists? Will people think it's too obvious? For a super long time, we had no idea. I'm very happy that it works. It works really well. Like, people are genuinely surprised.
I'm all about story. You know, if a game doesn't have a good story and a good narrative, I get really bored really quickly. But do you think that narrative and story are vital in computer games?
No, I don't think so at all. I think video games are an experience, and you can have abstract experiences, and then some amazing games that play on that level when it's just audiovisual, sensorial play, you know. Probably that's where video games are its strongest. If you push like what the medium is capable of and you exploit what it does best, it might be better without story, or with a story that is very loose and just alluding to a few things. Like the traditional narrative story, like ours, it's not necessarily the best for the medium. It's just, I think it was necessary for this project. Well, Francois, like, and the studio, Nerial, they really like narrative games and they like stories, and that's what they love doing. And I think just some games just need this. And our game definitely, I think, needed it. I think it benefits from having a traditional linear story with characters and development of the plot and whatnot. So in this case, it was the best decision, I think. But I don't think that is the best decision overall. Here is just, like, nobody would care about some card games if you don't put them a good reason to care about
them. Yeah, because otherwise it's just practice and then more practice and you lose some points and you move on. You're absolutely right. Is there anything that you left on the table? Is there anything that you wish you had managed to get into the game? Or is there room for a sequel? you know, is there room for more of this if you wanted to?
Well, yeah, there were things we didn't manage to get in. There were ideas. a few techniques that didn't find a place. Like I said, like anything about Faro. I wanted to have riffle stacking, but it's just too hard to translate into gameplay that is possible for human beings yes. who are not expert magicians to do.
Yeah.
But I left riffle stacking out and a few techniques like that. I had a mock-up for the bug, which is like a thing that you place under the table to hold cards for you, like holdouts and things like that. I wanted to have more gadgets, you know?
Yeah.
Even though real cheats mostly don't use them, they're super fun.
Oh,
for normal people, they're so fun.
Yeah,
no? Like real holdouts and whatnot. But I just didn't find any good ways to use them in gameplay so that they make the game more interesting in some way. I didn't find a good reason.
Yeah. Yeah.
What else? There were some things. Well, there were some characters that I wish we discussed and they didn't make it, or some scenes are less developed than we wanted to, but we're a small team, so we had to turn down a few things.
Yeah.
I also think, one thing that was also because of the scope of the game and the size of the team and just you have to compromise in things. I hope that by the end of the game, we stop teaching and there is a bigger feeling of freedom that you have mastered all these things and now you don't need to be told step by step and you can sort of figure out what you need to do and you can sort of like express your knowledge as a player, like suddenly you know what to do, or suddenly you have the freedom of choice of what you're doing, how. So we have a tiny bit of that around the end, but it's very slight. I was hoping we managed to do that better, but that required the game to be longer, which wasn't possible.
So,
a few compromises like that.
It sounds like clearly you need to do a online multiplayer version where
right.
with microtransactions and loot crates and all that stuff. And basically everyone can practice all their skills in the game and then they can just cheat each other. Yeah. And you can really cash in on that.
I mean, on the other side, like my goal was to get the feeling for the player that they have gone through, like if it's a game about card cheating, that's the promise, no?
Yeah.
So to fulfill the promise, you have to see all the major ways of cheating, and that I think is quite accomplished. Like people leave the game feeling, okay, I've seen all of this, and you don't feel like there's what about this other way? You know, there are all the major things that you can think of. I wanted to have at least one technique representing every chapter you would find in a magic book about centered around cheating techniques, no?
Yeah.
And so there's at least one technique for everything.
Because of who I am, I've devoured card cheating and con artist popular culture for the last 20 years. And I think this is the most comprehensive depiction of card cheating that I've come across.
I'm guessing part of your audience would be magicians also?
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
So really, really happy that magicians are appreciating the game, because I didn't know. Like, I'm not a professional magician. I don't know many. I'm starting to meet some right now thanks to the game. But I'm not really. I'm an outsider, you know.
Mm.
So I had no idea how it will be received. I was hoping it would be received positively, that people will find it respectful of the representation of what magic or cheating or card manipulation is about. So it really makes me happy to see magicians enjoying it, appreciating it, talking about it, because that's the source for the game. So I wanted to loop back, you know, not just to take away. Because we had no magician consultant on the project, you know? It was me.
It worked out very well.